Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.
Hey everybody, welcome to this week's episode of Whiskey Neat, spirited conversations with interesting people. I am your host, Christopher Hart. And yes, I don't know if you could see this, check that out, Brendan Schaub. Boom. I'm not a shoe guy, but check those shoes out. He sent me a box of shoes, man. Shout out to Schaub. This week, I'm upping my dad game quite a bit. This week, I sit down with Kenny Coleman and Ryan Cecil from Bourbon Pursuit, Matt Raywalt from Wrestling with Whiskey, and of course, the Bourbon Junkies, Dan and Sean. Lifelong friends and just so much fun to drink with, even virtually. So we are doing our version of a bourbon community roundtable, but basically, let's talk about all the rumors going around about the 15-year-old the 15-year-old liquid hitting the market, being from Beam or Barton or whomever, and to talk about our predictions for the bourbon community in 2021. So. I watched an episode of Bourbon Pursuit. I watch every episode of Bourbon Pursuit. I'm such a fan of Ryan and Kenny's, and I liked some of their predictions. I disagreed with some of their other predictions and thought it would be fun to kind of push that issue with them. So I invited everyone on today to talk through all of that. It was a great conversation. So for over 30 years, Signatory has been one of Scotland's premier independent bottlers, selecting the finest casks of whiskey from over 120 different distilleries, from big names you already love to your new favorites you've never seen, and even legendary closed distilleries. We call Signatory the single malt scotch whiskey because not only do its bottles come from one distillery, but also from one distillation run and from one single cask, bottled without additives like artificial coloring and at cask strength. So when you pour your glass of Signatory, you're getting scotch in its most authentic, most natural form. It's the closest you can get to a warehouse tasting without boarding a plane. Signatory Vintage Scotch Whiskey is bottled in Pitlochry, Scotland, and imported by Total Beverage Solution, Mount Pleasant, South Carolina, and must be 21 or older to purchase. Signatory is made to be enjoyed, but please, please, please do so responsibly. Without further ado, please welcome the Bourbon Junkies, Dan and Sean, Matt Raywalt from Wrestling with Whiskey, and of course, Ryan and Kenny from Bourbon Pursuit to talk about their new bourbon release, Pursuit United. Cheers. This is my first attempt at what you would call a wannabe bourbon roundtable, because we do know that has been perfected.
It's trademarked. It's trademarked. Yeah. You can't say that.
So Kenny and Ryan from Bourbon Pursuit are here. Welcome, guys.
Thank you.
Yeah, we're definitely excited to be here.
Absolutely.
And then, of course, we've got Matt Raywalt. Did I pronounce that right?
You did. That was actually spot on.
Yep. I am perfect. Yep. In every way. Welcome, Matt, from Wrestling with Whiskey.
What's going on? Course, thanks for having me.
We've got the Bourbon Junkies, Dan and Sean.
Hello.
How's it going?
Thanks for having us. Thanks for having us back on after we probably swore too much the first time.
I thought we did really well, and then you sent us the list of the amount of times and timestamps. I was like, we didn't do well.
You did a bad job.
I have enough comedians on the show that I prefer to give people the creative freedom to talk how they talk normally, and just hope that it doesn't piss off the station and whoever's re-editing, because the show's got to be edited twice, once for podcasting and YouTube platforms, and then for actual terrestrial radio. They've got to do it from scratch. So they've tried to mark the the cuss words, and a lot of them we can't use at all for radio. So you guys still made it on the air, so you're still good.
All right,
nailed it.
So there's a couple things that I thought we could discuss today. Kenny and Ryan, being ahead of the game, had the idea to start the Pursuit series a couple of years ago and have since broken into a bunch of different states. You guys have been killing the game and recently released your own blend called Pursuit United. Now, I also recently launched locally on a much smaller scale, a little label called The Prideful Goat. And I thought we could talk a little bit about this. I haven't actually tasted it. I got your media sample, and I haven't even tasted it. So I'm excited to get a chance to talk about it.
Don't do it live in front of us. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, this is why
save your criticism for after. Yeah,
my anxiety just went up. No, I'm kidding.
Just have Jack hard cut it to right after I taste it to just changing the conversation altogether.
Yeah. So this got awkward.
Yeah. So about storming the Capitol.
All you got to do is start swearing a bunch, and then he can't use any
that's
of the
true.
Review.
Here you go.
Just hard F, and it's all gone.
No.
And then the Bourbon Junkies just crossed 50,000 subscribers, and Matt's been doing his thing. And I'm a huge fan of all you guys. I consider you friends. And Matt was the first celebrity we had on the show. Like you were the first. Yeah. And
that does not speak well for your show.
Well, going back to competitiveness, we recorded it. And it was like a week behind or something. And then the episode aired with Ryan and on Bourbon Pursuit. And I was like, dang it. Like if I had known, I would have aired it sooner. So I'm a big fan of all you guys. So I'm excited that you're here. Let's jump into the conversation. So I did want to ask all of you, cause I know there's been some passive talk and a little bit here and there online about it. About the recent, this hobby is full of people that has heard something from someone and have it on good authority for this. And they've heard that and they've heard this. And it's even gotten to the point where on some groups, people are they're throwing out fake rumors just to start stuff like MGP being bought by Buffalo Trace, I think. So I always am trying to fight against this. Because I don't understand how it happens so often, similar to the whole storm the Capitol thing, where in politics we see so often things get kind of clearly be secondhand or thirdhand information and end up being wrong, but no one goes back and tries to, you know what, next time I'm going to question it before I start passing around this rumor. And I would love some more insight because Kenny and Ryan both, neither one of you are big on actual trying to debate online. Like you just, it's an all consuming thing that you'd rather just have a drink and not fight online, which is something I admire greatly because it's something that I struggle with at times. But the rumors that all of these new 15 year things are Beam or I've heard Barton, I've heard Barton. I've heard, one brand out of, California that I posted, said that it was they gave the city, and I forget the city, whatever city in Kentucky that Buffalo Trace is in.
Frankfurt, yeah.
Yeah, so the brand out of California that's recently releasing 15-year liquid says it's from this city in Kentucky, and the only distillery in that city would be Buffalo Trace. So it's kind of like
there could be there's Beam warehouses in Frankfurt, so that also could be where it's coming from too.
Right. So, but there's not that you're talking about, the old granddad plant.
Well, the Oak Crow warehouses are there. Some Beam bought those with the brand. And so they have a pretty big, storage facility over there, and they do a lot of bottling over there too of their lower tier, products as well.
So just to add clarification, the California Post says that this was distilled.
Okay. Gotcha.
Yeah. So just to add some clarity to that.
Well, distilled, bottled, made, you know, it can all be loose words
that you use nowadays.
Yeah. Produced.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's a lot of loose words used in bourbon labeling, you know,
it's whoever can, kind of stretch the truth the best on their label. And that always goes well.
So I've heard that our friend Fred Minnick, I don't know if you've heard of him. He's a very relevant guy. He's the one who said, as far as I know, that the source of saying, I've heard that these totes are Beam. And I'm just hoping for more context, because I know, I'm sure you guys are tired of talking about this in particular, but I figured this is our chance to like actually have a dialogue about it. So the only thing I can speak on is just Prideful. That's the only thing I can speak on. And I had been saying that it was a certain distillery that I'm not going to say again, because I was gently reminded that there was a non-disclosure agreement, but it wasn't Beam and it wasn't Barton. So I'm trying to understand where these things come from, that we tend to repeat them often. And if anyone from a specific different brand is the one saying it, because I would think that the people who have these brands could speak on where they got the liquid from, and or at least where they didn't get the liquid from. You get what I'm saying?
I think we're also seeing at the point that even the brands that have them probably don't even know where they're coming from. This is just a problem in the source whiskey game in general. Everything gets traded over hand over hand over hand. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, a lot of these totes are actually coming from overseas. Like, they weren't even in America.
Yeah, I remember about a year ago, I'd gotten word that these were coming from overseas, somewhere in Ireland or UK, but that they had these totes and they were coming back. And at the time, you know, the price was more than what it was, you know, now. And so I was like, that's just too much for us. But yeah, it, like Kenny said, it, people buy these things so long ago and it trades so many hands, you really have no idea where the original source can be sometimes 15 years down the road.
I definitely agree with that, except for in instances in which they stay in the US. I mean, that goes back to the whole Four Roses bullet thing. If it stays within the US, those things are tracked, right? You can track you're not allowed to change the barrel head, the stencil on the barrel head. If I were to distill a whiskey at one plant and I send it over to another plant, it's got to either stay in that barrel with the same original stencil to where the DSP doesn't change, blah, blah, blah. Same thing with totes. The totes are tracked in the US to where you know where it originally came from. Going overseas, it's a little harder to nail because they're not necessarily under the same obligations from the TTB, especially if it's being sold elsewhere. So I don't know where the rumors came from that it was Beam or Barton. And over time, it's evolved, you know? So I just was hoping for more context as to like, what, you know, are you guys under the assumption that it's Beam, or was there?
We make no assumptions. Let's make that clear. So we take a very different stance when it comes to reporting or talking about things, that we don't take things on hearsay. We don't talk about things that even like labels that hit the TTB, like we don't talk about them on the podcast because we've been burned before. And something that doesn't come out of fruition, or it's something that we get hit from a PR company. They're like, you probably shouldn't have talked about that. So we always wait for either press releases or something to come out now before we can really officially talk about it. But this is just one subject that, you know, we've been seeing this proliferation of 15-year-old Kentucky bourbon hitting the market. And I had applauds you as well for keeping, I think you have the lowest SRP of anything that hit the market versus there's some that are around like $400 or $500, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah. I've seen them as high as, I think $399.
Yeah. Whatever that one, that's like the crazy freaking spiral shaped bottle that says Kentucky barrel strength on it or something really weird on it. But you know, this is just one of those things that it's fun to be able to put these out. And I think what you're experiencing now is, you know, there's just people that are hardcore consumers like us that just want to know more about it. The general populace, they're not going to give a shit. Like, they don't care. Like, they it's fun to get a 15-year-old product, a 15-year whiskey, but hardcore geeks like us, we just kind of want to know where it's from, where it come from. And I think that all boils down to just the sourced market in general. You know, this is the something that we always have to continue to battle is, if we're buying barrels from stocks that companies are continually putting out, I mean, Barton is a clear, good example of that. When you're buying it on the open market and you're putting it in a bottle, that's why you see all these private labels or these people that are starting brands off this sourced product, and they're $250, $300 a bottle. And you're like, wait, hold on.
It's just a 1792 foolproof or, yeah, you know, or whatever
like
brand, you know,
that's or $75 a bottle. Yeah. Like, so it's a hard, you know, pill to swallow when you're coming from that source market. And that's why I think for us, we try to figure out like, okay, like where am I trying to compare to on like an SRP scale?
Yeah. I mean, the bourbon that you guys just released, it's perfect in the sense, just right off the bat, like one of the greatest reviewers of all time is a guy named Ralphie. He's still the best. If you go to YouTube, Ralphie's reviews, so educational, so fantastic. But there's just a few things that you know, looking at a bottle right off the bat, that indicate there's a little bit more effort and passion behind it. You hit the $60 price point for Pursuit United. Great proof. Like, I'm so excited. I might as well open it now. Matt, have you tried it yet?
No.
No. Okay. I'm excited. All right.
When we were scheduling this, I saw Matt and I was like, oh, we should have got him a sample.
Yeah. I tried to get I wanted to mail you guys a bottle of the GOAT in advance, and it's been a complete nightmare. So we soft launched at a local distillery here in Houston, and it all sold the first day. And the distributor, as you know, can be a bit of a headache in trying to get the distributor to just, I mean, you're based in the city. The liquor store that all this is going to is like a couple miles from you. Just take it over there. And somehow it takes 2 or 3 weeks just to get from point A to point B. So it hasn't even released yet locally at the retail level. So I didn't get a chance to send you guys a bottle. I know Sean and Dan both have a sample bottle of it. With no
way looking for it.
That's just Texas whiskey laws for you, or Texas alcohol laws in general.
And Texas logistics, like where everything is slow. Everything is no one knows what they're doing.
It's a big state.
Yeah.
Don't mess with Texas.
Yeah. But, back to your point about, you know, $65 priced, right. You know, our whole thing with this. So we were, you know, we had the pretty good success with the single barrels and with those, we were sourcing whiskey from, you know, the usual suspects are, you know, what available to us. And we're like, and single barrels became a real burden and kind of a pain. And so, and our broker was actually pushing us. He's like, look, you all need to try to come out with a small batch of something, you know, to blend. It's going to be much easier scale. But, you know, at the beginning of that, thinking about that, you know, all we had available to us is the usual suspects, MGP, you know, Barton, you know, whoever on. And so it's like, well, do we just want to be another sourced blending brand, you know, that's buying how many barrels of MGP or how many barrels of the 12 year Barton or whatever. And we really didn't want to do that. So we just kind of were hesitant, but then our broker came across a contract distiller in Tennessee. That's not in Tullahoma. We always preface with that.
We need to make sure it's prefaced because there's a lot of
stigma and bad things. But
let me respond to that. Is there a reason why? And I'm sure there is. I'm just curious. Why you don't just say the distiller name versus the city and where it's located?
For NDA reasons, you know.
The distillery that's not doing it.
Oh, that is
you always say, yeah, not in Tullahoma, but why would you just not say not that? Maybe you don't want to, I guess it would be kind of shitting on the brand.
No, I'll be honest with you. If I told you the city where it's from and you Googled it, you're not going to find it.
Yeah.
Actually, I know where it actually is, but I meant as far as saying, like, I'll just say it. It's not Dickel. Like, what? I'm just right. Curious why you wouldn't say it's not Dickel versus.
Well, we'll let other people say that for us.
Yeah, we want other people to say that. That's for sure. We're
perfectly fine letting you all say it. But anyhow, he came up with this, you know, stuff was turning four. And he's like, you got to try. And we're like, okay, whatever. It's 4 years old. You know, can't be good. So we go and try it. And we're like, holy cow, it's got great color, great dried fruit notes for how great young. Not great nose, like great profile. It was missing a few things. Like it didn't have like a great finish, had a great front mid palate. And we're like, okay. And it was priced enough where we're like, okay, we can finally get our price. If we use this as the base, we can start to get our price to that $65, $70 range. And so we started there and then we're like, well, we just need to blend it with something older. And so we're like, that's where we're, originally thought we were going to blend it with the Barton, the 12 year. And I'd been messing around with the blends and we came up with one that was fantastic. We thought it was great. But then the price of the Barton barrels shot through the roof and we could no longer get that price point down. And two, you don't know how much longer that's going to be on the open market. You know, you're kind of at the mercy. And so we kind of started thinking, well, you know, there's some other 5-year Kentucky, 6-year Kentucky barrels on the market. What if we play with them? And so we kind of played with them, got it dialed in, got a sample, you know, go to the broker. We're like, all right, we're ready to buy. And they're like, they're sold out. You know, they're gone. And you're like, what? We're ready to buy, you know? And this was in a matter of day, like one day. And so, you know, we just kind of kept getting frustrated with the source market, you know, being at the mercy of it. And so I took the original base product from Tennessee and I was like, you know, this is what I think we're missing. It needs some like a little bit more fruitiness, some like softness to it. You know, we have a great relationship with Finger Lakes, you know, and we had already bought in probably 8 or so barrels from them. We had some in stock. I was like, let me start throwing that in there, see what it tastes like. And so I was like, man, that's really good, but it's still, you know, Tennessee and New York is cool, but we're missing KY.
Right.
And, you know, we're from KY. So I was like, how can we get this KY component? And, you know, it took me a while, but one day I was just happened to think, you know, I think we had reviewed like Chicken Cock, their 2-year rye. And I was like, gosh, this 2-year rye is like really good. And it's from BBC. I was like, why don't I call BBC, see what they got in the 4-year range. And so called them up. They said, hey, they were excited about the opportunity. We were excited. If you've ever been to Barstown Bourbon Company, they are like one of the most hospitable people out there. And
Ryan,
yep.
You and I went there together.
Exactly. Yes, we did. We had lunch.
We had lunch there. God.
Yeah. And I'm sorry to be long-winded about this. I'm just trying to get it. And I know there's others on here who want to talk, but I'm just trying to put it all in context. But anyways, Barstown Bourbon Company, they have a great thing going. Their contract distilling for people. They're excited about the opportunity to work with us. We went through their tasting lab. They said, hey, if you partner with us, this tasting lab's open to you whenever you want. It's not just me blending on my desk with little cheap 100 ml beakers I bought on Amazon. You know, and you have a team there that you can bounce ideas off. And so we found a mash bill we really loved and started messing with the ratios. And there you have it. It's the first one that we did. It's about 10 barrels and 2,200 bottles.
Yep,
is what the first one came out. And we couldn't be more excited because we think it's just something that's very unique that's not on the market. And we're really trying to make it about the distilleries, not about us. You know, every time
a little bit about us.
Well, a little bit. But to be, you know, they're always like, well, we can make a custom mash bill for you, or we can do this. And we're like, no, guys, you all are not knocking it out of the park. This is really good distillate at 4 years old. Like, we'll let you do that. We'll just blend it together. So that's kind of the genesis of all this.
So then with this blend, are you going to, is this some, because you mentioned like the barrels selling out and then you not being able to get them like day two of your 2-day experience in that one situation. So this, I know how you guys do your Bourbon Pursuit series, right? Where they're, each release is different from the last one. Is this, when you guys do your next release, it'll be a completely a different blend entirely then?
No. So that was one of the things that we had even originally thought about on the packaging itself. Like, do we put a line underneath that we can say like, oh, this is batch two, or this is batch three. Yeah. We're like, no, like we're going to go like general market, single kind of label, and we're going to try to keep a consistent profile as much as we possibly can.
Over here.
And so the goal is to continually scale this so much so that we can take this really kind of nationwide in a few years. Like that's ultimately the goal of it.
Yes. Yeah, so we're starting to lay down new make it with all three of these distilleries. And between now and the 4-year mark, we obviously have some supply issues because a year ago we had no idea that we'd be even doing this. And these distilleries didn't either. Yeah. So they only have so much available.
They want to hold on to it.
And so that's what we're doing now, is trying to work with them. All right, what can we do each year between now year till year four? And so, yeah, we just want to make something that's consistent, you know, it's priced well, and it's just something like a whiskey geek can enjoy and not break the bank for. Think it's something that's unique enough that brings value, but it's not going to break the bank.
Well, I have you tried it yet, Dan and Sean?
Yeah. Yep.
Did you guys discuss it on your show?
We have not. No.
Nope.
We just tried it right now.
Oh, you just tried it right now.
We just opened our, we just got ours back out to try it right now.
We had cracked it when we first got it, and then we obviously
cracked it. We're in the middle of something, and then I was like, you know what? This is a perfect time to actually sit and think about it.
Yep.
Man, nothing about vulnerability. Nothing like vulnerability. You know.
Right. Nothing like you guys
feeling vulnerable. You know, right now,
us drinking it right now.
Get ready with your F-bombs.
don't feel vulnerable. I think it was Kenny who shared an article this morning that basically said it tastes and smells much older than it is, and I have to agree. As far as the nose goes, it smells great. It's got a very old. I would have guessed. Twice the age. I think the article said that it tastes twice. Now, taste wise, I don't think it doesn't taste 8 or 9 years old. It definitely got some young oak in it, but.
So it's interesting because there's this thing with some New York whiskey, and I don't know which one. I just know on the back here, obviously it says distilled in Kentucky, Tennessee, and New York. So it's interesting to me when I saw the New York on there, I was like, that's a super interesting move to blend a New York whiskey or bourbon or, you know, whatever into your project, because it's going to give it a character. I feel like New York has, not to the extent that Texas whiskey has its own character, but like New York has its own character to some extent.
Yeah.
And I don't know if it's because a lot of the New York whiskey that I've had isn't like super old or anything like that. Yeah. I don't know if it's because their climate's drastically different.
Temperament is a big deal there. It's the same issue they have in Texas. That's what gives it its funk or whatever.
And that's what, like, that's what we just always refer to something as, like, there's Texas funk. Mm-hmm. There's like Maker's Mark has their own funk.
There's Tennessee funk.
Right. Like there's different
uptown funk.
Dude, exactly, right?
There's all kinds of funk.
We're bad with words, so we don't have a better word for than funk. But New York, like when I drank it, I'm like, see, there's like this little, and it's like not an overbearing thing. It's just this little
twang.
Like, hey, what's up? There's a little bit of something else in here that's not your average everyday. Like, listen, I've had Barton 100 times, had MGP 200,000 times. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had like everybody's stuff. When you have it repeatedly, you start to say, oh, MGP tastes a little bit like Buffalo Trace or something like that. That has profile. That New York, I think I didn't have your guys' blend pre-New York. The New York adds like that little like, wait, what is there something else there? It's not just your normal everyday like, hey, there's Barton, there's whatever, right?
Yeah.
We've had a really good relationship with Finger Lakes Distilling out of New York, and we've released a few single barrels from them. And I think the very first single barrel we chose from them was their weeded mash bill, and that's kind of what we got hooked on. I mean, it's so good because it brings a lot of these vibrant fruit notes to it. And at 4 to 5 years old, it's done. Like, it's perfect the way it is. And we kind of found that, and to kind of go back to what Chris was saying at the very beginning about, you know, trying to find the right components into this as well. It's really hard to find good whiskey at a young age.
Right.
And we felt that we were able to find the right partners. And I think that's really what went down to this. It all kind of started with that Tennessee distillery, because when our broker said like, hey, here's some 3.5 year old Tennessee bourbon, you got to try it. And we're like, oh God, here we go again.
Eye rolls.
Yeah. We all taste a lot of young craft whiskey, and we're like, okay, that we could use another 6 years in the barrel.
Sure.
But we tried this, we tasted it, and we're like, oh my God, like it's super dark. There's no youth. There's none of that. And it really set the base for it. And that's kind of what started the project of finding all the other components that we could really bring together. And the goal with all of it was to, you know, not have an age statement on it. And so making sure that everything was over 4, the Finger Lakes component is 5 years old. So we really wanted to, and our goal even in the future is to mature this just a little bit more. Like if we can get it to a 6 to 7 year range, I think we're going to be in, like, there's, I just feel really confident about it, because you look at most of the major brands in the markets, cough, Blanton's, that's a 6 year product. So I feel like we'll be in a really good situation when we get to that stage, but I'm very, very happy with the product that we have now. And honestly, I think we'll be able to roll with what we have now for the next, 4 to 6 years.
But yeah. I mean, even Brown-Forman, like you mentioned Buffalo Trace, but even Brown-Forman in that you're talking 4 to 7 year range, there's a, it's wild because I think that's like one of the things nobody knows. Everybody's so quick on like this white paper tech spec, like, hey, that whiskey says it's 100,000 years old, so it must be the most incredible thing I've ever seen in my life, right? But then you're like, well, my favorite whiskey is like Old Forester 1920. You're like, that's like 5 or 6 years old.
Yeah.
I don't even know if it's that old sometimes. Yeah. I mean, I mean, a lot of the barrel proofs are coming out. They're 4 to 5 year old products.
Yep. And they're I mean, they're fantastic.
It just comes down to you have to have a mash bill in the process that works. When you have that locked in, when it's good at 4 years, it's going to be great at 8, you know?
Yeah.
Just getting that fine tune is what makes it. It's devil in the details, you know?
Oh, Jack Daniels, 6 years old, Maker's Mark, 5 years old. Yeah. I mean, it's all right in that. There's plenty of examples of great young whiskey. I mean, Matt's done a lot with New Riff, right? I mean,
My God. Yeah, absolutely. There's a ton of, and actually I wanted to look it up because I wanted to make sure I quoted it right and everything. But just the other day, Lou Bryson just came out with that article, Stop Wasting Your Money on Bourbon That's Too Old, talking to a lot of master distillers and stuff like that. I mean, I feel like it's the thing we've been, people in the know and in the enthusiast community and everything have been preaching for a long time, is like, everyone still leaps after 15, 20 year old barrels and everything like that. And sometimes you can find a money one, but there's still very little argument that anywhere in that 4, 6 to 8 year, maybe 10, is kind of the perfect sweet spot. And any blend of that, like you said, most of your favorite whiskeys are probably non-age stated. And, you know, like, you have no idea what's in them anyway. So that's actually one of my like whiskey resolutions for this year anyway, is to try. I mean, I'm a curious fan and enthusiast and stuff like that, but try to obsess a little less over certain details like that, and just kind of what is in the bottle, what is in the glass in front of me, and how does it stand on its own?
Right.
Yeah. And I think you reach a point in your bourbon journey where, you know, 15-year-old whiskey, I mean, you can't replicate it. It's great, you know, but you've had it time and time and time over again. And so you're always curious and interested. What else is out there? Who's doing something? Who's new? Who's doing this? And that's what, you know, that's the interesting part now to us, because it's hard and expensive to get, you know, 15, you know, 12, 15, 20 year old bourbons. And so it's like, all right, where can we find those younger ones that don't break the bank, but, you know, still give us something interesting to take to a party and have somebody try, you know, and that's what we were looking for. And it's funny you say New Riff. Every night I would have my wife sit out bottles of New Riff, because they're great 4 year old distillate, and I would compete it against it and blindly, you know, trying to at least either match or beat it, you know. And so that was kind of how that was like my benchmark.
It's super cool that you guys blended this. I think what you guys,
like, that was an understatement.
What you guys are doing with the Pursuit series was, at least in the podcast and in Whiskey Tube space, you guys were in my, I could be wrong. I think you guys were the first one with your own private label that I'm aware of.
Yeah.
And so it was super cool to see that come out, and that it's seemingly doing really well. I know you guys have done a lot of releases now. And then on top of that, you mentioned barrel picks earlier, and I know last year you guys did a ton of barrel picks for the Patreon, right? So I know you guys are doing both. And then when this came out, I was like, I saw on Instagram, you guys, we were talking on Instagram and you mentioned this, and I'm like, wait, in my head, I'm going, they already have their own label.
Yeah.
And they'd already do a ton of store picks. Why? Wait, what we're just doing another label for the hell of it or what? And then when it's, I saw that it was a blend, I was like, that's awesome. Because now, especially, I like the fact that you guys are going to try to keep it as consistent as possible, because your other set of releases and your other series, your other label,
you get your variability
You get all of your variability that you're going to need. And then you can consider, or you can rely on this, especially at a $60 price range ish. That, I mean, 60 ish right now is seemingly a completely normal price for whiskey, right?
Yeah, right.
Anybody adding an eye in the whiskey universe at $60 a bottle.
Anymore. $60 a bottle is a bargain now, regardless of what you release.
Exactly. Yeah.
That's how bad it's gotten.
And we knew we can, I mean, and there's bottles, you know, they're in the 30, you know, from the big boys, you know, and they have years of scale and that, and, you know, you can get much, you know, great value from there. But, and we knew that going in. So we were like, all right, if we're going to be $30 higher than them, we have to have something that's just stands out, even it's young. And so we're our biggest, you know, we're like, we got to, you know, there's some great distilleries making great 4 year old juice, you know, Wilderness Trail, New Riff, you know, I was even using Willett, you know, younger stuff to compete against. And that was, it's like, we got to be, you know, compete with those guys. That's kind of where we're trying to find our niche. And yeah. And it, we're trying to kind of copy off the Willett family estate model, where the Pursuit series will be, you know, unique single barrel offerings, yeah, you know, kind of like the Willett family estates. And then this will kind of be like our Johnny Drum, or, you know, kind of an everyday offering.
It's better than Johnny Drum. Definitely.
Well, I appreciate like that.
And I actually like Johnny Drum.
I do too. Johnny Drum is fantastic.
It's,
you know,
it's yeah, if we're going to be honest, I think it's better than a lot of other similar priced Kentucky offerings. There's a great distillery out of Kentucky, I won't say who, that does a pretty good job with rye, but wide variability in their single barrels. And I've always said that I think it would be an exceptional rye at $60 versus.
Yep. I know who you're talking about, and I completely agree with you.
You really, when you just went,
yeah. The price used to be $120 a bottle, and now it's like $60, and so significantly perfect at $60. Right. And there's a lot of them like that. There's a lot of fantastic rides out there, but the whole reason Prideful was the cheapest SRP was because I do think we are getting to a point. For a while, a lot of distillers were removing age statements, and prices are going up and going up and going up. And now a lot of them are bringing those age statements back and realizing, like, specifically Knob Creek is not having the greatest time or easiest time trying to go from 15-year-old barrel picks for $45-$55 to just doing its own SKU in a box for $100. It's not like, yep, it's not the same as it, you know. I love Booker's,
and it's proofed down, you know.
And it's not cast strength. Yeah,
that nice 100 proof.
Booker's is I think objectively great, but it's also, it's too much. It's, you know, they originally wanted to go from $50 a bottle to $100, and then they backtracked a little bit. The only one making great decisions is Brown-Forman, in my opinion, currently.
Yeah.
Jackie Zykan is, I talk about her all the time. She's fantastic.
She's a whiskey superhero.
Yeah, she does no wrong.
And she's doing everything she can to connect the bourbon community and what we want and what we're looking for.
Yeah.
Old Forester picks are pretty good, but please give us the cast strength ones. And within a year or so, you know, and then of course what Jack Daniels is doing, that rye that was just released is off the charts.
Love that so much. It is ridiculous. There was a lot of hype for us because we had several people that tried it and were like, it's fantastic. And we're big Brown-Forman fans. And then we're like, all right, well, we had a little bit of hype, had it, and was like, what the heck is happening? How is this coming out of Jack Daniels
at $65.
Yeah,
I don't know how many expensive rides we bought this year. Everyone we could buy, we bought. Like the Owl and
Carter's.
We had the High West 16 year that came out. The Carter's, you know, all these.
That 16 is damn near perfect, though.
Are you talking about the High West?
Oh yeah.
It is literally. I'm such a High West fanboy that I shed literally several tears.
It was embarrassing
when I drank it for the first time, but. And it comes in the cool, shiny, you know, oiled up bottles or whatever. But there were a lot of, last year, there were a lot of really good ryes. This year, there were some more good ryes. And then that Jack Daniel came out late. And I'm a big fan of the Heritage release that Jack Daniel did the 2 years previous. And Sean likes it, but isn't as big of a fan. So when this came out, it was like, it's basically their Heritage rye. And I'm like, all right, it's $65. Listen, we had Kentucky Owl, which did go up in price, unfortunately, yep, for the final batch or whatever it's called. And we had the Michter's 10. We have all these. And I'm like, it's not going to stand up to like Old Carter Batch 5 rye. And then we have them blind and the Jack Daniels literally wins. And I'm like, this bottle was $65. Uh-huh. That makes it like, what the hell is going on? It's magic, man. It really is. It's wizardry.
Yeah, I think the two best ryes on the market right now that are regularly available to me is Russell's Reserve Rye. Same price, about $50, $55. And then, yeah, the Jack Daniels. But, you know, anyone who got a hold of a distillery only 375 that they sold, I think, last year, the last couple of years, knew that Jack Daniels had some of the best rye out there.
Tennessee Taster you're talking about?
Yeah. And I'm not I'll be honest, I'm not a big fan of the rare breed rye. I think it's completely.
What?
I don't think it's as good as Russell's Reserve rye. I think if I'm not mistaken, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think rare breed is $10 more expensive and younger, and Russell's is older and $10 cheaper.
Wait, hold on. Are you getting on that age statement bandwagon we just talked about right now?
Nope. There's no age statement on it, right?
No, but your reference. Okay. No, listen, This is going to be an unpopular opinion. Russell's rye for some, I like Wild Turkey 101 rye a lot. Russell's rye for me just doesn't do. I don't know what it is. There's something about it. And Rare Breed Rye came out, and I had way higher expectations for Rare Breed Rye because Rare Breed is so damn good. And I thought Rare Breed is one of the greatest values ever created in whiskey, as far as I'm
100% agreed.
It is.
And I was expecting the same exact experience with Rare Breed Rye, where it was like, this is going to be one of the greatest rye values in whiskey ever. And it's not that, I don't think, personally.
Wait, wait. So we're in agreement. You don't like Rare Breed Rye as much
as you expected. I don't like the Russells either.
Fair enough. Fair enough. Yeah,
I was about to say, there's like some like inception of like making everybody like not like something. Then they like, wait, I do like this.
somebody sent us an incredible message the other day. It was, I think it was a YouTube comment, but they were like, I see what these guys are doing. They're talking shit about all the really good whiskey so that it's all left on shelves and then they can buy as much as they want. And I'm like, we're not smart enough, but that's a really good idea. Like,
that's the anti-Fred Minnick move. That's the opposite of what Fred does. Fred ruins his hobby for us by making everyone scramble and everything becomes allocated. I mean, that is truly a sign. Last time I had, so I had Ryan and Fred on together. Kenny was somewhere. I don't know. But Fred, I think he's a legitimate candidate for Bourbon Hall of Fame. I mean, look at what Chuck Cowdery's in it. And I don't think anyone's done more.
Who's that?
You don't know who Chuck Cowdery is?
I really don't. I'm sorry.
I don't.
It's okay.
That's a joke. Really? Oh man, Chuck's a legend.
Yeah.
Listen,
he's one of the original whiskey writers.
That's right. Okay. He was pre-Fred Minnick, but instead of an ascot, it was just a pretty face.
I can barely read, so this is why I'm out of the.
If you've ever watched any of our live streams, you know why I read, and Dan just sits there and is pretty.
We have to talk about for a sec. That Fred Minnick's face was just on giant billboard.
Oh, yeah, in Times Square.
That's when he made it. Baller move right there.
Like, if you don't make Hall of Fame when you're up on, like, live billboards in Times Square, like, what are we doing? You know what I mean?
But can we take, like, I know it's mean, but can we take a little second to rib him because his face was on Times Square at a time when nobody's hanging out in Times Square?
Oh, man.
He was basically on the AM station of Times Square billboards.
Don't take it away from him.
Yeah. No, absolutely not.
His one shining moment just ripped away.
I was going to say I'm willing to pay out of pocket for my face to be there.
We can't afford it.
Literally 4 a.m. I don't care what time it is. Like
we get 3 seconds.
Right, dude. It's just a flash.
Well, Fred, as far as if you look back at the actual precedents or requirements for Bourbon Hall of Fame and those who've got in that are similar to Fred, I don't think anyone has done more in the media space or, you know, as far as influencing that from a non-distilling perspective in bourbon, I think Fred qualifies. I'm a big Fred fan, but I think he's easily a candidate for Bourbon Hall of Fame. Changing subjects, pivoting for a minute, you guys just did an episode for your New Year's Bourbon Pursuit where you guys discussed your predictions for this year in the bourbon realm. It's a fantastic episode. I loved every second of it. I find myself arguing with you guys through my computer screen. And you guys made a prediction, but I don't think you're considering one factor. So I want to get into it. Do you guys remember what your predictions were, Kenny and Ryan?
Well, mine was talking about, we all know that celebrities and bourbon are starting to go pretty much well hand in hand now. Everybody... Mm-hmm. Either you're a country singer, you're wanting to get your hand into a label, everything like that. I had made a low bar that said 5 new celebrities were going to come into it. I'm thinking it's probably going to go to 10 or 20, but I did say that at least one is going to be a rapper.
Ooh.
So I know that Ian Somerhalder, and I can't remember the other guy's name, Vampire Diaries.
Ian Somerhalder. Yeah.
Yep. Oh. And then the guy that plays Stefan in that show, they're doing Brothers Bourbon. That's coming out
from Vampire Diaries.
Yep.
Wait, what's their market?
We were supposed to do an interview with them twice. Our last two trips to LA canceled first before we came the first time, and then this last time we were there the day before the interview he canceled. Their market is mostly younger audiences and mostly female. I mean, they're heartthrobs. Ian Somerhalder looks
like my wife wanted it. She was like, "Oh no, you have pull, right? Can you get me a bottle? Because it's sold out."
Whoa.
I was like, "Not pull. That kind of pull. Like, who do you think I'm getting a message?"
Yeah, they're not sending us.
No.
Listen, we could dress up though. Yeah. We could look like 25-year-old like hotties. No, you can't. Realistically.
Oh, I just want to see you in drag now.
No, I don't know the price point. I don't know the price point they're looking for. Or he's looking for both of them, but it's I think it's 4-year-old MGP. It's
okay,
yeah,
fairly young. It's at 80 proof as well.
Oh wow!
So if it's under 50, I think it might do pretty well. It's tough. It's with the celebrity brands, and I think I can't remember if the Bourbon Junkies covered it or if Ryan and Kenny covered it, but someone was talking about launching a celebrity brand. You can launch a brand off celebrity, but you can't sustain it if it's missing something, right? If it's not good, if it's overpriced, there's a few factors, right? You can do great and sell very well a particular brand at your launch, but people aren't going to go back and buy it again if it's too expensive or whatever. So I agree with Kenny. I do think there's going to be quite a few more. But the great thing about that space is people try it, and when they fail, they move on with their lives. Drake could have been the most perfect guy for bourbon, and Virginia Black was straight garbage.
Yeah, two-year-old, $80 proof
in a perfume bottle. Yeah,
right.
Yeah, it was awful. But yeah, I know Brendan Schaub's got his whiskey coming out. I'm hopeful for that, and
Chris Hart, you know, it's got his
celebrity in the game.
You count
well. Here's the bummer part, Chris. You know, I don't want to talk bad about the guy. He's a great guy. Love the guy to death.
Whiskey sucks.
You know, he made it really hard to find. I'm gonna be honest. Yeah, I'm blaming him for that 100%.
Yeah. Well, I'm taking the same route that Ryan Kenny. And actually, I didn't purposely copy you guys. It started with coordinating HBS's barrels. It's as long as I don't have to front any money, I'm happy to do barrel picks and set them up for the group. And we eventually got to a point where single barrels aren't enough for a group of 10,000 people that are mostly Texas located. So if we wanted to do bigger things, I either had to convince a brand to do it. And we got Lynn Cantata to do a blend. Foursquare is doing a blend of 1,000 bottles. And I don't have to give Foursquare any money. I just have to ensure that it moves.
You doing so bourbon or rye?
Foursquare is
rum.
Foursquare is
I went to
the
Fort
best
Gate.
Ever. Rum.
Yeah,
I love Foursquare.
But yeah, if we're gonna do something and you know it requires upfront money, then it's gotta be a thing that I do myself. So
right.
Hey everybody, I want to take a quick moment, take a pause in the show, and talk to you a little bit about Waterford Irish single malt whiskey. This is an exceptional, different farm to glass, grain to glass, single farm, single origin Irish whiskey that sets itself apart and does everything it can to prove that terroir in whiskey is a real thing. You can check it out at glassrev.com/Waterford today. Cheers. And there was another prediction that you guys...
Hold on. Real quick, before we move on from the celebrity prediction, I want to say that, and I don't know if everybody here, I don't think everybody here's into Scotch, but there is a celebrity whiskey that did the thing correctly, and that was Nick Offerman with Lagavulin, right? Yep. So the Lagavulin, I put it in the celebrity whiskey category. It's got his face on the front of the bottle, on the label. It's got his quotes on the bottom label of the bottle. But
I think that would apply that he is a celebrity in whiskey. Yeah.
Right.
His face is on it. Yeah.
I think the reason I say, I don't know if everybody applies it to celebrity categories, cause it's not necessarily his whiskey. It's still under Lagavulin's label, right? Yeah. Like Bradshaw made his own label. Peyton Manning at least attached himself to Sweetens Cove.
I would Slipknot, argue like Long Branch also. It was a $35 bottle.
Sure. Okay.
And I mean, it paces with what Wild Turkey has to offer. It's really good.
I don't know.
I like it.
You said really good, which is a lot, right?
Pretty good.
I mean, listen, I've definitely 100% had worse whiskey. Yeah. Definitely that. No, but here, the thing about the Offerman is people aren't saying like I've had worse.
Yeah.
If you like Lagavulin or you like Islay Scotch, that Nick Offerman celebrity whiskey is one of my favorite Lagavulin offerings. And it's Nick Offerman's offering. Right?
Yeah, I think it's like $65 too, right?
Right. I think I got mine for 75 and change. Yeah, so it was cheaper, like
cheaper than the original Lagavulin.
Right. Exactly. And I think it's still what it's an 11 year. So it's not like they dropped a ton of age. They sell a 9 year. The cast strength is 12 year. So I hope moving forward in celebrity whiskey, I hope what some of the celebrities do, some of them hope they're actually into whiskey. Cause I think that's why Nick Offerman did his that way is because
he loves Lagavulin.
It's not, a lot of these are money grabs, right? Because bourbon is getting bigger or growing up or whatever. And so I hope with the celebrity whiskey comes more Nick Offerman type whiskeys. I hope it's somebody going to a distillery they love. I hope it's somebody who loves Brown-Forman, going to Brown-Forman, working with Jackie and the team over there.
And they would say, hey, I've already got this project going on. Would you be a part of it?
I hope that's how it works. We'll see. But
if you think Matthew McConaughey is difficult to get an interview with, Nick Offerman is impossible. I have asked every 6 months at every chance for 3 years. And at this point, they just stopped responding. I would love to sit down with Nick Offerman, man.
He's just in a shop doing some woodworking,
building canoes,
just drinking some Lagavulin, living his best life.
He's got, he ain't got time for you.
Yeah. I'm surprised anyone has time for me, to be honest with you. The fact that both all of you guys showed up today, like with 4 days ago when I first reached out, is fantastic.
Yeah. And I showered this morning. You got a twofer there.
Both showered. Did my hair. That's usually where I had.
I was going to say.
I did my hair.
You just throw a hat on.
But, so you guys had another prediction. Really, it was a disagreement. You guys both do not believe that a certain thing will happen this year when it comes to the new bottle sizes. Go into that a little bit, and then I'm going to pick it apart from this perspective.
Yeah. So one of the things that if anybody's unaware, so the TTB has now approved new sizes for bottles that can be put on store shelves. Typically what we see in the US market, you've got your standard 750 ml. You've got your 1.75 liter. You've got, you know, your 100 or 200, whatever the smaller ones you can get, kind of like the, you know, sample bottles, the airplane bottles, everything like that. But now they have approved 500 mils, 700 mls and 1.8 liters, which are typically only reserved for the European or import market and stuff like that. Now, my prediction, and I also want to take this at, I saw this prediction somewhere on Facebook where somebody said, well, all these companies, what they're going to do is they're going to now move to a 700 ml bottle and they're going to keep the price the same. And I said, there's no way that's going to happen because nobody understands what it takes to go through the packaging process, especially at a large brand, to sit there and say, oh yeah, let's go ahead and change our packaging to remove 50 mls and keep the price the same, when there is so much that happens between packaging, big bottling, everything like that.
Right.
I would almost argue it depends on the brand.
Wait, hold on. I want to hear the, cause they were, Chris said you two were arguing about it, right?
Well, yeah. No, not an arguing. No, sorry. What I mean is that
we are in agreement. Chris, I think, is probably disagreeing with us. Okay.
Sorry.
I assume people are thinking, you know, along the lines of BTAC or Pappy or, you know, something in that regard where it's a something that's widely, you know, they have mass distribution of it, but they want to be able to capitalize more price per unit.
And what other people don't think about is that when you buy glass, if you're getting a custom made glass, odds are you've already paid $50,000 for a mold. You're not going to go repay $50,000 for a new mold to bring something smaller. And if you're buying off the shelf, not everything you're getting off the shelf comes in all these varying sizes.
So I agree with you in part, and let me draw a line here.
We're going to line up with Chris on this one.
So any brand that only makes 750s, sure, they're not going to go through the process of reordering, changing that whole thing, redoing packaging from the start. I agree with you completely. But there are a lot of big brands who are already buying smaller bottles to send overseas to the European audience. So Buffalo Trace already makes 700 milliliter bottles.
Mm-hmm.
So they could essentially just stop ordering 750s and adopt and order larger quantities of their 700s, something that they were already doing for the European audience. And then, boom, they've already made the shift without any major changes or costs associated in packaging. So I do think it's definitely possible for anyone who is already bottling at 700 milliliters for the European audience and for anything they send overseas. I agree that I don't think anyone that's doing it here that, and I know there's many people may not know this, but a lot of your 700 milliliter bottles from smaller brands here in the US are actually 750s for Europe. There was a European broker that reached out to me about the rum for my bottling company. And he basically just said that they've got to be 700 milliliters to come over here. But really, as long as it, the part that says the bottle size is on the label, not the bottle itself. So I was like, oh, okay. But yeah, that being said, I think that's the one thing you guys were not considering in that prediction. I think that if they're already doing it, then they wouldn't be changing anything, you know?
Well, it does make scale to go uniform across all your product lines. And sure, that way it doesn't really matter. Yeah. You could ship it to Kansas. You could ship it to, you know, somewhere across the world. And the other thing that also needs to be taken account to this is upstream. What does it look like at the distributor level? When you need to make a change like this, there's paperwork, there's Excel files, there's their database that has to be updated. It's going to change their case pricing. It's going to change what the retail tag looks like on the shelf, what they're charging to the to your retailer at the same exact time, unless they're not changing that, but they do have to change something with inside of their systems that says now this is 750 and not a 700, not a 750 anymore. So there are some upstream things that still have to happen. I'm not going to say that those are big hurdles, but there still are.
It is when you're dealing with Texas, you know, you got to go in there and, you know, they have one of the slowest ABC departments of anyone we've dealt with. But yeah, I could just imagine being a brand trying to redo all the paperwork with them. It would be a nightmare. But, you know, I'm sure there's some, you know, Mark Brown or some fancy, you know, smart CEO, some bean counter that's going to would do that cost benefit analysis and say, yes, it is worth the juice is worth the squeeze, or no, it's not.
And that, I think that'll be the issue, right? Yeah, it's like some CEO is going to make that decision, most likely, or a team, CEO and a team, whatever.
But at some point, company just says, we're Sazerac.
Yeah.
We have the money to do all that. We can do it if we want.
If they can do it long
term. I don't think it will happen, but to say that it's not a possibility seems far-fetched.
We have a 700 mil blends here.
Yeah.
And it's not from this country, clearly.
Yeah.
But there's no, like, now, obviously, we don't have 700 mil Rock Hill. We don't have 700 mil Stag Juniors and stuff. Now, on the flip side of the whole argument, right? Hear me out. If they switched BTAC to 700 mils from 750s, 500 seems like it's too little. But if they switch from 750 to 700 mil BTAC,
you're not going to walk past it.
And they could make 20,000 more bottles a year. I'm in. And you keep the price the same. I'll still pay whatever around retail.
Keep this in mind, Dan doesn't understand math. So
I was going to say, I think 50 mLs is a stretch to make another 20,000 bottles.
I'm exaggerating things. I'm making up numbers in my head. This is kind of one of those things. Let's just go on a ride, right?
Someone did make the comparison. Someone did the math. And if they were to switch to 500 milliliter bottles, which is essentially a 25% reduction in bottle size, okay, it would double the amount of bottles.
I'm actually in, honestly. If that's
you're
true,
gonna pay the same $100 if you see it.
But here's the thing. I just paid $50 for a 375 a sack.
Is Kenny doing the math?
I can see them doing
it. I know we're trying to do
it.
I'm
like, wait a second, you reduce it by 25%, but it makes 50%? Like,
yeah, yeah. So I felt the same way at first, and then I challenged him. I was like, you're bad at math. And then he showed the math and I was like, that actually makes sense. Because what you're not just reducing it by 25%, you're reducing all, like, let's say they make 40,000 bottles, and if they were all packaged at 500 milliliters, then instead of 750, it would double the amount of bottles. So you're taking,
I don't think it would double it, make it 50% more, right?
Right. No.
But that wouldn't be double.
Sorry, that's what I meant to say. Sorry.
Yeah. Gotcha.
If you did 40, it would add 40,000 bottles. It would turn it into 60,000 bottles.
Still kind of in though.
Yeah. Let me get the spreadsheet.
Dan, you're right.
It
Dan,
is.
You're,
it's
50%. I'm in.
Sure, that's fine. I don't care. I'm
500,
still in because
500 mils for $100 of BTAC, I take it. I'm with you 100%.
If that makes it just a little more available, I'm in, because listen, if we see a George T. Stag, it's still $300 now.
Easy.
Right? So if we're talking, am I going to pay 150 at 500 mils? Probably.
It'll still be 300. It'll be 300 at 500.
Here's the problem. You're probably not wrong. And then the unfortunate part is about you not being wrong is I – I would probably make that mistake one time and then be like, why the hell did I do that? And then I'd have to not.
And then we drink it and be like, that's why I did it.
Well, shit. Not with some of them, though. This would be the bummer part is like when there's a year release that we weren't the most fond of, then you'd be like, damn, dude, I spent $300 on 500 mils. But like Saffle did the 375 mil, right? Mm-hmm. WB Saffle. They did the 375 mil. It's a great whiskey. It's fantastic. But that's an $80 bottle of whiskey and or 90 or whatever. I don't know that everybody's paying 90 for that, right? So they were so smart to go, it's really good whiskey. You can get in this cool little bottle, which, by the way, your guys' bottle shape on this is fantastic. I love it because it looks like a grown-up Saffle to me, and I like that a lot. So the I'm so big on bottle shapes. It's so dumb.
I understand this.
I'm so into glass
shapes. If you guys do good marketing, Dan will buy it.
Listen, also, real quick, I know I'm off topic, but the color and, like, the shininess of the United here, when I pulled this out of the packaging, I was like, is that sewn onto the label? Because it looks like it, like...
What we're 3D. Learning is you're pretty much just a goldfish.
Yeah. If your marketing is good, your glass is good, your label's good, I'm in, dude. Bought. I'm buying at least one or two, right? Uh-huh. But I think if we're going to... I personally don't think they do a great job on limiting the overpricing in non-secondary markets.
Yeah.
So retail. We'll
just stores, right? Just doing an outrageous upcharge.
We have three stores around us that all at least triple to 5X retail on all BTAX, period, no matter what. And so with them doing that in Buffalo Trace or at least some of Buffalo Trace being very worried about the secondary market, which I know isn't legal, which is I know why they're worried about it. But then you have stores marking it up so stinking far that the secondary market, it's the same in my retail shop as it is on Facebook, right? So if we can bump down and they can lock in, it has to be around this MSRP in a retail shop, I'm in, man. If it becomes more available and I have to pay $150 for 500 mils instead of $300 for 500 or $750.
That's impossible to do.
Yeah, I'll take another stance to this as one to echo what Chris said. You're never going to be able to do that because the laws of this country are not going to be able to enforce it. The second part, as we go back to talking about bottling and packaging, is you have to understand from a marketing perspective of what that would do to the brand. That if you go and you package these up in 500 mLs and you go look at a bar, you'll be like, oh, look at it. It's really like Rudy when he runs on the field. Like, look at him. He's so small. You know, it's going to look bad on the brand. Like, they want to be big, bold, and tall. Like, that's what they want to go for. And especially when you're looking at a bar with a bunch of other bottles, you don't want your antique collection, your pride and joy of the company, of the best bourbon that you put out, to look like this little miniature thing. Like, you just don't want it to look like that. So that's why I would venture to guess that even from a marketing perspective, they wouldn't do it.
I'd also flip it and say, like, look at the old Fitz, the half barrel. That's a 375. You open that up, you're looking at a sexy bourbon.
Angels are singing.
Yeah. Like, so if you're looking at a bar and you see something that's listed at $50 a pour and you look at the bottle and this wee little thing, you're like, that must be some special shit.
Well, think about Old Forester birthday bourbon, the squattiest bottle of all squat bottles on the market. Also,
yeah, that was expensive. A tough call. I just said that Brown-Forman doesn't do anything wrong, and the birthday bourbon bottle shape is pretty rough, man.
Yeah,
they started it back way in the day. You can't turn around now.
It's the worst pouring bottle on the planet.
100%.
Yeah.
Do you know how many times? Go ahead.
I was about to say, by the way, if you didn't know, once you start getting this world and actually start sourcing glass, you can actually buy the birthday bourbon bottle and do your own label.
Yep. I'm in. I'm selling.
Southern
whiskey or whatever. Yeah.
Somebody sent us some of these, and they're definitely the same shape. Uh-huh. It's a craft distillery.
Yeah. I can tell you exactly where to get it from.
So the one thing I'm thinking about, though, on this, and kind of the other opposite, we're talking about, like, are the big brands, are they going to change? Are they going to start shrinking it down from whatever? I'm wondering, craft people or people who aren't in the market yet, who are like, well, all right, I'm going to buy 15,000 barrels, but I can get X extra bottles if I put out a 500 milliliter as opposed to 750. And it's kind of a unique, it makes them unique because they're going to sit on the shelf and like, oh, it's a little bit smaller, but it's maybe it's got a cool label. It stands out because it's not the same size thing on every shelf. So is it going to entice some craft people, some startups to, hey, can we get more bottles and charge a little less than some of the guys? But if I can sell a 500 for $40, where I was going to sell 750 for 70, 80 bucks or something, and maybe just inch your profit up a little bit more. I think that's a big potential outlet for some of these glass sizes.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. It definitely appeals for the craft guys to help them make a little bit more profit per bottle.
It's a standout too.
Well, seemingly one of the things in craft, maybe not as much today as it was like 2 years ago when it seemingly like there are 800 million craft distilleries launched at one time. But one of the things that seemingly was happening was they're all making, obviously there's time. Like you guys were just talking about with the United Series, like you guys laid down
filling a 4 year gap.
So now you have a 4 year gap. And so one of the things a lot of craft distilleries were obviously dealing with was like, let's make vodka and gin because we don't have to age it. It's cheaper to make while we age like a whiskey for 4 to 6 or whatever years. And so a lot of the source, right? Those are kind of your options. It was clear liquor or source MGP or Barton or whoever or Dickel. So it was one of those things that it was like, now if we can do 500 mils, we can make way more money on source whiskey. Because we're only doing 500 mils. Then when we switch, we can keep it at 500 mils and keep making more money. That's really, that might, I mean, on top of it helping
you're blowing Dan's mind right
with
now.
Your bottom dollar on craft, it might help a lot with, there are a lot of places that didn't get a lot of MGP because they got into the sourcing idea really late, right? So a lot of the MGP they have right now is 5 or 6 years old, not 12 or 13 like a lot of people had. And they don't have as much of it anymore. So being able to bump down, we literally know a distillery that doesn't have a whole lot of MGP left that had quite a bit. And so if they can bump down to 500 mils from 750 or even 700 mils, you're saving some whiskey, whether it's 50 mils or, 250 mils, you're saving some whiskey. So if you can do that and still put out your MGP product, which is making you a lot of money right now, that would help a ton with overhead.
And it helps with selling like your new product too. Like as a consumer, if I can buy a 500 ml and try it, it's not as, the cost of entry is not as intimidating for me. And so it makes it more appealing for me to give it a whirl.
I do agree though. I think Kenny's point about Sazerac's marketing department wanting to stay, not to be, we want to stand tall. This, and to be honest, I do think the BTAC is the crown jewel over the Pappy line for sure.
Yeah.
Although, totally. In my personal taste opinion, but the other side of that, it would be more financially beneficial, especially to the distributors. So in Texas, we have a real problem with something called inducement, where the distributor will ask a retailer, you want a bottle of Handy, then bring it 10 cases of Wheatley vodka, or bring in X amount of cases of Fireball. Inducement is completely illegal, but it is a bargaining chip for the highly coveted stuff. So if you did all of a sudden had 50% more bottles to bargain with, then it long term, even in the short term, I think you would see, as we do know with Buffalo Trace, is all their products sell to get the rare stuff.
Yeah.
So if there was 50% more, that's more, that many more cases of Wheatley vodka or Fireball or any of the other Sazerac products that are used to force a store into, Blanton's is a big one, right? I mean, I know many stores, it's like, you want 3 bottles of Blanton's, then X amount of this.
The word inducement just sounds like you're,
I was like, we having a kid.
It sounds like I'm going to the doctor to get something popped or something. Like I'm going in for my inducement.
You're about to have a baby.
I didn't know the term for it, but we know a store owner very well here locally that he's talked about that before. Well, illegal, but it's pretty much common practice you want this bottle. I mean, just to throw Sazerac under the bus again, I guess. You want this bottle of whatever, BTAC, Bland's, Rock Hill. You're going to have to buy so many bottles of this crappy vodka and 15 cases of Fireball, and then we'll put you on the list. And then you'll get one, and that's great. But you're now sitting on all that inventory of 15 cases of Fireball. It's great, but...
they'll still sell.
It's like
Fireball. College kids love that shit. And I don't think it's Sazerac. I think it's the distributors.
It's a distributor. Yeah.
Sazerac's been, to their detriment, keeping the prices the same and lower on these. It's brought a lot of this drama upon them. But, the Fireball sell, but maybe not the Wheatley vodka. I don't know. I'm not sure much of it.
Let me defend the distributor as well, because a lot of times it's not the official stance of that distributor.
Boo but this
it's,
man.
It's usually the sales rep, right? The sales rep is given some bottles to give to their best customers, and what that sales rep will do. I know of, Buffalo Trace, you know, they can't really do anything that the distributor is forcing stores to take on more of their products. However, the one time they will step in is whenever it's not a product of theirs. I know a store locally, like right after Hurricane Harvey, in order to get a case of Blanton's, just six bottles, they had to bring in 10 cases of Devil's River. And
how'd that go for them?
What's that?
How'd that go for them?
Yeah. Well, they brought it in. Yeah. I mean, and it was NASA liquor. So it's one of those things that if the brand does find out that their bottles are being used to sell their products, they will definitely step in. Right after Fred Minnick put Henry McKenna on the allocated list, I know a store locally that had to bring in the coffee liqueur by Patron. And when Heaven Hill found out about it, they were like, no. Like, you better not be doing this. And it's like a lot of times it's a single rogue sales rep who's trying to get the most out of these bottles and not the official stance of whatever distributor you're working with.
So a local shop here, I was in the store when he was on the phone with the, I don't know who it was from the distribution company, but.
No, we're about throwing people on the bus. Give him a name.
No, I don't know the names. He's on the phone with him. And we were chatting, and he's like, just a sec. And he picks up the phone, and I can hear the guy on the other end of the call. And the guy goes, if you buy three cases of larceny, and it was after the Henry McKenna thing. He's like, if you buy three cases of larceny, I'll give you one case of Henry McKenna. And that was like, he said it like plain as day, like nonchalant. It wasn't illegal.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't wrong. Right. And it was like, and the guy, and of course, the store owner is like, all right. You know what I mean? Like, because the only way I'm getting Henry McKenna now was just stated on the phone. I have to buy three cases of larceny. I still have two cases of larceny sitting on the shelf, and it is what it is, right? And so I know that, like, so Michigan is – I don't know how it is with everywhere else, but Michigan is, like, sort of state-run because our store picks all go through the distributors here as well. So if you want a Buffalo Trace store pick, the distributor gives it to you, not, like, Buffalo Trace doesn't allocate it to you. Buffalo Trace allocates Michigan 20 or 50 or whatever Buffalo Trace store pick. The distributor then allocates it to a store. So what they're doing all up here as well is leveraging store picks to buy Wheatley vodka and Fireball and whatever else. Right. So it's unfortunate. And it, like you said, it's illegal. And obviously Sazerac handing Michigan 50 or Buffalo Trace handing Michigan 50 store picks. After that, they're like, cool, man. We gave Michigan 50. We're good. We're out. Yep. We backed off.
Good luck, everyone else.
50 people do store picks and whatever.
Yeah, right? Figure it out from here.
Right. Yeah. I can't speak for all states. I know it's definitely defined as an inducement here in Texas. And I know it's illegal in Texas.
It's illegal here, too.
The way around that, from a legal perspective, is you can essentially, the way barrel picks work in Texas, is you assign it to a store as an order before it comes in, because technically, legally speaking, they can't not offer, like, if something is in the warehouse and you call in your store and you call and it's there, technically, unless it's pre-spoken for, it should be made available to all liquor stores.
Okay.
So they'll pre-assign it or pre-order it, create an invoice for that store so that when it comes in, it just needs to be shipped out. So it's pre-spoken for.
We just switched to that system last year because RNDC dropped like the biggest ball of all time and stopped delivering whiskey and liquor to everyone at the same time.
They also got sued for several million dollars. Yeah. So
Switched warehousing and then they switched their inventory system. And then like liquor stores went 3 or 4 weeks without any delivery shipments from RNDC, who's like all Brown Foreman. A lot of Sazerac up here. Like
Kenny and Ryan are like, guys, stop talking about this. They're our distributor.
Nope, you're good.
But we ended up switching up here to that system.
Yep.
Where if it's in a warehouse, you can do that because a store last year got 32 birthday bourbons or something like that.
Awesome.
They got like 80% of the state's birthday bourbon allocation.
Might have been more.
Because they found like a issue with the website where they did ordering. So if it was there, no matter how many you ordered, they would just bring it to you.
Yeah.
And the truck driver brought that.
Yeah. If you were the first in and ordered like a pallet,
it doesn't matter.
Yeah. You could put an infinite amount, but the website would always see that as queued first. So somehow like they were like, well, we can just abuse this and took like, I think it was almost 90% of the birthday bourbon that went to the state, went to one store.
That happened. That happened in Houston a few years ago with the Al Young bottle. There was one store that could call in the order, and then online the order, and then pick up a will call, and basically got the entire allocation for Houston's Al Young. And then the distributor had to say, if you don't bring those back, you'll never see another limited, like an LTO offering again. And they,
brought them back. They were like, hey, you need to like write this wrong. And they were like, nah, we're good. We're going to make enough off this. We don't care.
No, the distributor never did that. That's what everybody wanted the distributor to do.
I thought they.
Nope. The distributor was like, hey, give those back. Guy goes, nah. He goes, all right, cool. And then they moved on with their lives, which is really cool.
Oh, I thought there was almost some repercussion.
Everybody on Facebook wanted the repercussion for sure.
Perfect.
But, so going back to the subject of predictions, I was curious to borrow from Kenny and Ryan again. What if you guys, the bourbon junkies, and of course our friend Matt, if you guys have anything that you think is really going to, what's changing in the landscape of whiskey for 2021 and maybe 2022? What's your, I'll start with it. And I do think I agree with almost every prediction. I do think that maybe what Fred was hinting at, if there was a, Fred also predicted that there would be a major distillery buyout. And I know this is a running joke about MGP being bought by Buffalo Trace in the bourbon forums, but I wouldn't be surprised. But, you know, MGP's had a rough few years. I wouldn't be surprised if MGP was one of the major distilleries that saw a buyout this year or next. And I agree with the celebrity thing. I agreed with all of the predictions, except for, I think it was, I forget who it was, but somebody predicted
Ryan with his Heaven Hill entry proof.
Yeah, that was wild. Yeah, there's no way. Yeah. Yeah. And the fact that I couldn't remember, but you knew exactly who I was referring to. That's how crazy that was. There's no way Heaven Hill is going to lower their entry proof. No. But are there any predictions that you guys see happening in 2021?
For sure, easy. Weller will put out a new label to which people will be able to buy, and that'll be that.
I expect at least two or three personally, but
six listen, new Taylors.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But they just the Warehouse C 10 year just came out. Yeah.
No, I got approved.
Eagle Rare. Yeah.
Well.
Eagle Rare. I think that there's gonna be a bunch of like wild barrel finishes. I think we weren't fans of the Angel's Envy, the Mizunara cask, but I think Buffalo Trace has already been approved about like with some Mizunara cask thing, or they're doing something with a Mizunara cask.
Do you think more experimentation will be done?
I think so, because
it's getting to fruition that people a few years ago started doing some crazy things.
Most of it's not even that good, but people will pay for it.
Yeah.
Woodford's Master's Collection is not often great. And it's often over $100 and it's often purchased. So
yeah,
I think like Master's Keep is doing, I don't know that theirs is necessarily experimental, but it's off their normal beaten path. Right. I think there's companies doing these types of releases every year. Like Jack Daniel's does a Heritage and stuff like that. And people are buying them and people will pay up, you know, people will pay more than $100 for them. And it's a one-time release and it, you know, you haven't had it. Parker's Heritage Orange Curacao was $150 and people bought the shit out of it. And it was terrible, right?
Yeah, they really jumped the shark with that one.
They jumped the shark, as some would say, come to find out.
I made many old fashions with that because honestly.
It gave me nostalgia because I always used to eat those chocolate oranges.
Circus peanuts.
No, chocolate
oranges. Oh, yeah.
And it kind of tastes like chocolate oranges in a weird way with alcohol in them.
I hate to give Wade a reason to feel anything, but he took a bottle of Early Times Bonded. And did a blind experiment adding Orange Curacao directly to the Early Times Bonded, and put it up against Parker's Heritage, and it blew it out of the water.
Okay,
in a true blind, it was pretty bizarre. I do think. Do you guys? I know this has been discussed too. Do you guys think that? Or I don't think. I know Early Times just sold. I wouldn't be surprised if we eventually saw barrel picks for that.
I think it's going away.
Well, I mean, that goes back to the very beginning.
Why do you think it's going away?
The rumor mill. So everyone wants to be first on what they're reporting. Right. Yeah. Because if you're right, you're the forefront. Everyone now listens to you. and
you get your face on the Madison Square Garden
going around with what Early Times is going to do.
Sure.
That, you know, it's contract distilling. It's going to go away. They're mixing in light whiskey. There's so many rumors going on. So I don't know what to believe.
I think it's going away.
I don't. What, so let me tell you why. Let me tell you why that's crazy. No.
It's a 150-year-old brand. They would never do that.
Early Times is this current iteration in the 1 liter bottle was designed specifically for case movement in bars. It was not meant to be a bourbon enthusiast bourbon. It was meant to be a bar bourbon, a well bourbon. You're at the for a bar, it's $20 for a 1 liter of 100 proof bourbon. It's perfect for cocktails, and they sell a shit ton of it. The fact that they sold the brand is extremely surprising to me to begin with. But I think there has been a ton of chatter about it within the bourbon community. I wouldn't be surprised if it turned into barrel picks, but it's definitely not going away. I would bet you your whole setup, your camera, your mic arms, everything, that there's no way they're getting rid of Early Times.
I bet it absorbs into a different line.
I'm not sure they know what they're going to do with it, but they're going to do something with it. You wouldn't pay that much for a brand to squash it.
And there's a lot of time to figure that out, too.
What's Ron Foreman doing with all that money they just got from selling the Early Times line? Like, I am assuming it's not a small amount. What are you doing with that?
They're covering the losses from Jack Daniels for the past year.
No, that's true.
No, because of COVID. Oh, yeah, because of COVID and trades or tariffs.
Yeah, tariffs are killing it.
Because that's their number one export, and Jack Daniels just got hammered.
I just assumed it was to pay for the Woodford Reserve Baccarat.
That's true.
$2,000.
We need some cash up front to pay Baccarat back for these nice decanters.
There's no, and listen, I could be wrong, and I'll say I was wrong inevitably if
he never will.
But
there's no way in hell that one of the greatest value bottles in whiskey ever. Just a second.
We got Dan's son coming in. It sounds like. So this is what happened.
Wait, Dan has kids?
Dan has two. Somehow.
Does the state know this?
I got two receipts.
He claims 20, but he's got two.
Okay, so there's no way in hell that Sazerac, which is one of the companies marking their own products to secondary to some extent, Weller Antique going to 60, Special Reserve getting bumped over what secondary prices were. There's no way that they decide to keep Early Times Bottled and Bond, one of the greatest values in whiskey ever, period. $22 liter. There's no way that they keep it a liter, or they keep it bottled and bond, or there's no way that it stays what it currently is. Because Sazerac isn't that company, seemingly.
Yeah.
I don't know what they put out that's anywhere that they haven't been kind of toying with, changing away from a value. Special Reserve was a fantastic value product at what, $18?
Yeah, I think I bought one for $19.
And now it's $40 in Michigan.
Yeah.
Antique was a really great value at $25, and now it's $50 or $60 in Michigan, right? And that's not the only stuff they've been toying with and playing with price-wise. So I don't think they bought Early Times to keep it as the best $22 liter of bourbon on the planet. I don't think that there's any way they keep it that way. I think they see there's value in it. Heaven Hill's done the same thing where they jacked the price out of a bottle everybody loves. They changed the label, and now it's apparently a $50 or $60 bottle with one more year of age on it, right? I think the Early Times, I think that whole situation changes. Whether they just keep the bottle the way it is and make it $40, I could be wrong. I don't know this. I don't know if they're contract distilling from Brown-Forman. Are they making their own whiskey now? Like, what are they going to do with
that? They're taking the stocks that were allocated to that particular brand as well.
Man. So what happens when that runs out?
Well, then they backfill with their own stuff. I mean, that's typically what we're going to see happen. And honestly, I don't think we're going to see anything happen with the brand in 2021. You've got years to be able to figure this out.
Right,
still,
right.
At least 3 to 4.
Yeah.
And they will do something to protect the heritage of the brand. I mean, it is a brand that has a good stake in the history of American whiskey. And so I would eventually see something happen to it, but I don't think we're going to see it this year.
Let me ask you guys this. Do you think Sazerac takes it and maybe tries to, and I don't know if this is like a bold thing. Everyone knows them as the kind of high-end whiskey group. I mean, do they try to revitalize their kind of middle bottom shelf, you know, portfolio, as it were?
They already tried to do that with Benchmark, didn't they?
That's what I mean. I bumped that up, kind of like just really more of an option to that.
So have like, Early Times replace Benchmark.
something like that. Something kind of working into that kind of part of their portfolio.
If they can turn the brand around, because I think in the short term, let's just say you're right, Dan. Let's just say they. That's a prediction that I'm kind of stuck in the middle on. I can't say that I don't think for sure it will happen, but I think if that goal for that brand has been case movement and bars at that price point, then if they were to take the brand and change it and it no longer be a value to bars, then it would be, they would be short term, they would be taking a huge dip in sales, right? Because if the goal is to put it into a well at a bar and right. you change it and it's too expensive or the proof is, it's just not the same, it's going to be a tough, it'll be a short term loss. And, but they would have to turn the brand into the reason why Buffalo Trace's core brands, Weller in general, is because they sell every bottle they make. There's no concern, right? Every bottle they make, they sell. Every single brand is on allocation. Then I don't think that's going to be the same for Early Times. They'd have to make it appealing to the nerds enough to move that kind of movement at a higher price point. But that's going to take some time.
The problem with Buffalo Trace comes with all of their stuff has become allocated. We put out a video with Eagle Rare in it, and everybody complains that they can't find it.
Regional distribution.
Nobody can find Buffalo Trace. Nobody can find Eagle Rare. Nobody can find Weller Special Reserve. Nobody can find anything anymore from Buffalo Trace, which, I mean, so here's the problem.
Okay,
Buffalo Trace adds 18 Wellers a year, four E.H. Taylors a year, and a whole new line of Benchmark this year, right?
And now Stag's doing picks.
E.H. Taylor started doing picks last year.
Yep.
Nobody could find E.H. Taylor before the pick. So what are we doing now? Why do we keep adding new labels and new stickers to portfolios that nobody can find to begin with, right? So then nobody can find enough Antique 107 except Ohio and Texas. Nobody. And so then what they do is they take Antique 107 and make Weller Full Proof. Well, then nobody can find – or they made CYPB, but then nobody can find that, so they made Full Proof. So nobody can find Full Proof.
Now they made Single Barrel.
There's a Single Barrel. Like –
the pumpkin spice Sazerac label isn't
known for like treating the people with all the whiskey they want and need, right? I think Brown-Forman is one of the best at supply or you know, fulfilling supply and demand. Buffalo Trace or Sazerac, whichever company is actually responsible for that, I don't know, but what they don't seem to be that company. Early Times under the Brown-Forman label made sense that you could go find Early Times for $22, Old Forester Rye is $25 and everywhere. Right?
It also blows my mind to say that Early Times is that like well whiskey. The amount of people that we've turned on to Early Times or have never even heard of Early Times Bottle and Bond, it's like, oh, wow, that's a great value. I've never even heard of it. I've never thought about it. So like to just think of it as a well brand blows my mind. Because how much I just love it as really an actual bottle. Whiskey, yeah.
Well, the idea of selling to us, the people versus bars is a fairly new thing for Sazerac. I mean, most big brands, all their money, their moneymaker is bar movement. Their focus is bar movement. I have been trying for 6 years to get a barrel pick from Weller. I've talked to the state manager every year, every January 1, I send him this email, and over time, because it's been so many no's, that the email is getting more and more ridiculous. I offered him a gold foil Charizard card from 1995. Like I made every offer. I had my kids draw my picture. I'd say, I'll offer you this artwork from my child. Like, and every year it's a no, right? So because they just simply, by giving a bar, like Reserve 101, a Blanton's pick, across the board, they'll sell more of all of their products. And it's just not something you're going to get from a bourbon club. It has been impossible. Right. No club in Texas has been able to pull this off. And it's a newer thing for them to be focused. And in Buffalo Trace defense, they have, I think last time I had Harlan Wheatley on, he said that they, and maybe Kenny and Ryan can correct me, but I think he said they were putting 2,000 barrels a day, putting whiskey into 2,000 barrels a day. And I don't know anyone pumping that kind of, I mean, they're doing everything they can to keep up with demand, but it's tough.
I believe it's 1200.
1200. Yeah.
Yeah.
What's 800, yeah. 800 barrels between friends.
You know, yeah. Yeah. It's 2000 ish. No, I don't remember these little things, these fun facts.
Heaven Hill does the most at 1500 a day.
Jeez, oh, Pete. That's wild.
And they're putting a lot of liquid out there.
That's wild.
No one thought 10 years ago, you know what's really going to spike in 10 years?
Yeah.
Everyone's going to be buying bourbon. We should probably double our production right now. Just, Matt, that is wild to me.
Do you have any predictions?
So the things stick out to me. It's tough because the liquor and especially whiskey industry moves notoriously slow on a lot of things. So it's hard to say like 2021, but I think we'll start taking steps. Just outside, I think that, I mean, you guys talked about Unbourbon Pursuit, but I think the RTD market is going to continue to explode, I think. And I think even despite all the tax issues that you guys had brought up as well, I think we will start to see more like, I remember in England seeing the old canned Jack and Coke, like it's an export thing, but I think we'll start seeing things like that here, even if it is a hair more expensive than White Claw and things like that. I think they're going to take a shot on that, especially as people are continuing to stay home and wanting things easy and simple and available to them in their own homes and or at the store. So I think that is going to continue to grow beyond the malt beverages. And I think we're going to start seeing true cocktails from the big guys, I think in some way, shape or form. And I think the next big, I don't think we're going to see anything concrete, but I think we're going to start again in this same kind of pandemic environment, major steps towards direct to consumer shipping from distilleries. I don't think we're going to get anywhere this year, but I think we're going to see legislation introduced or stronger pushes towards it. And so I think by the end of the year, I have a feeling, like I said, I think we're going to take a couple of big steps forward given the current climate of everything.
Okay.
Well, I was going to say, I had to pull out my Jack Daniel's whiskey seltzer as you were talking about the big guys getting into it. We got sent these and they're not great, but it's a Jack Daniel's seltzer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. They're a crazy moneymaker, those things. The only thing that I worry about with those is anything that has any business model that relies on super small profits and a high monthly overhead, like RTDs. It's you're hoping to make a decent markup in perspective to the cost of the retail cost of a can, but you're hoping that those pennies add up to dollars over long term by selling thousands and thousands of cases of it. That makes me nervous because that's the same model as restaurants, and as we've seen, bars and restaurants offer operate off of super thin margins, and a lot of them have been crushed by the pandemic. I say that, but then breweries and liquor, everyone's been, sales are through the roof for the consumer at home. I don't know. I think you're right. I think we'll see more RTDs for sure. I do think we're going to see more. When people talk about the bourbon bubble, I don't think we're in a bubble per se. I think we're more, there's a lot of brands really trying to capitalize on the 15-year, the older stuff at crazy high prices. Sweetens Cove is atrocious to me. It's atrocious. It's so heinous. And I think you're going to see a lot of those brands who got their foot in the door, like Kentucky Owl was, that shit is everywhere. No one is buying it. It's sitting on the shelves. It's like the celebrity brand thing. You can launch it, but over time, there's going to be a lot. I think you're going to see the return of a lot more older, age-stated, at lower prices product on the shelf. I mean, I could be wrong, but I think we'll see kind of bourbon level out a little bit, hopefully, for a better pricing at older age statements.
Yeah, and we can save this argument for another show, but I I disagree. It's still
that's okay.
And I said the same thing 4 or 5 years ago, and we're still just beginning, unfortunately. But fortunately and unfortunately, so we can definitely talk about that on another episode.
Yeah, my attempt at Prideful Goat was to do that. So you can have inexpensive 15-year-old bourbon at $100, give or take.
And now we're just at the market that $60 is an appropriate price for your bourbon. So,
but it's a great bourbon.
See what the future holds.
I know we're running out of time. I really appreciate the sample of Pursuit. I thought it was totally fantastic. Absolutely worth the $60.
Yep.
I'm excited to see the direction you guys head into and what happens the next few years, because I think you guys are just getting started. I think I just asked you guys the other day when you're going to quit your day jobs. And it's getting there.
As soon as that whiskey ages.
Yeah, it was like, you know, this is going to be a continual release for the next few years. We're aiming to keep it around 10,000 bottles if we can for the next few years. And then once our whiskey actually comes of age, we'll be doing close to 90,000 bottles a year for this particular brand.
Jesus Christ.
That's wild.
And we're... That's the whole point of contract distillation, so we could scale this puppy.
Yep.
And so we're very happy to have those partners with us. And then we can also expect a United Rye blend to come out at some point.
Oh, nice. Yeah, I saw there was some, I don't want to put it out there. We'll talk off air.
It's okay. It's all good.
Yeah. So what do you got coming up? Bourbon Junkies. I know you guys just crossed 50,000. Matt, what's in the chamber? Where can people find you? Let's get all your promotional stuff out there.
Yeah, we hit 50K store quitting. So
yeah, we had a good run.
Yeah, it was a great time and we had fun.
We appreciate everyone's time
and support. You know,
we're out.
I don't know. So we have plans for 2021 that couldn't happen in 2020. So we'll see if one of the hopes and dreams in 2020 before COVID stuff happened was like
your celebrity brand.
Yeah.
I'll see you in 2027.
We're getting a celebrity though, like an actual celebrity. But one of the things that we were going to do was go and start like being on podcasts and like expanding to different platforms and stuff like that in 2020. And then COVID happened and then travel kind of obviously got shut down. We were planning on having a meetup for the channel and then COVID happened, you know, things like that. So last year, the channel's about 2.5 years old. Last year, one of our main goals was to do a barrel pick with our name on it. And we got that done. Yeah. And it was a nightmare and we had, because we live in Michigan and it sucks when you live in Michigan, but we did get it done. This year we've got different partners that we can do barrel picks through now. So we don't have to deal with the Michigan aspect of it anymore. So we can do a bunch of those if we want. We have some other plans that like we've been talking to patrons about. We'd like to build a new building. There's stuff like that. So
yeah.
Very cool.
It should be a wild year. Yeah. I can only hope that things continue the way they're going.
Yeah.
If not, I mean, Dan will get us canceled and then I just go back to work.
Yeah. If we hit 55,000 subs this year, we nailed it. You know what I mean?
And Matt, what's going on with you? Where can people find you?
I've been super excited to just be here with you guys. I feel like I sat back for a lot of this because like I'm in the presence of people I all, you know, admire and look up to in this whole space. I'm still like a bourbon baby. I realized today, I'm like, I've only been drinking whiskey for less than 4 years. So like, this is just cool to have conversations with people like you guys. But for me, it's just kind of like continuing what I've done over like the last year or so like that. I'm still very new into the space, but Wrestling with Whiskey is on YouTube and Instagram. And in the last half of last year, we have a small barrel club on Patreon. And we're about to go pick a new riff. We just picked a 1-8 Untitled series last year and a Woodenville. Got two or three more lined up coming up this year in the early half of 2021. So hopefully seeing that grow and everything like that. But again, just pretty much look up Wrestling with Whiskey on any social platform and you will find my lovely bald face.
Love it.
Kenny and Ryan.
Yeah, so we've got a lot of good plans. I mean, we kind of already told you what's happening with the Pursued Spirit side, so we're really looking forward to doing that. We're actually heading on a plane here relatively soon. We're going to Woodenville to actually go select more barrels that will be coming out as Pursuit series, and we'll be going back down to our broker in Tennessee as well to even pick out more barrels for Pursuit series. So there's going to be a lot of cool stuff that's be coming out with that line. So we're going to continue going doing Pursuit series. We're going to start seeing kind of some rumblings of Pursuit United Rye. We're going to hopefully have our next bottling of Pursuit United be in the probably about mid this year. We're expecting around 8,000 bottles for the next run of it. So it'll be about four times the size of what we did in this one. And
we need Matt to come with us to wrestle with the people that have the whiskey to sell it to us.
Yeah,
cause
it's our guy.
I've never been in a situation where you're begging someone to sell you something. That's just the way it is in this business, but go ahead.
Yeah. And on the podcast side, you know, we're very fortunate, very glad of, you know, the trajectory and, you know, being kind of at the top of the game for where it's at. And honestly, for what we're trying to do with the podcast is I'm trying to scale back a little bit because I felt like I put in way too much time, and we tried to really spread ourselves thin of trying to do lots of different things. And we're kind of going to focus really just on the podcast and really making that the best it possibly can be. And we're currently in our recording week right now. So we've got
two more today.
Yeah. So we've got a lot of podcasts that are coming up here that will be,
my head already hurts.
No, and those will be released at before July of this year. So we're getting all our recordings in relatively soon. But no, again, thank you for letting us come on.
That was awesome. A lot of fun.
We talk about United, talk about the plans for it. And of course, for Bourbon Pursuit, you can get us wherever you get your podcasts, every single major platform, and including YouTube as well. Granted, we only have like 7,000 subs there, but we're a little bit different animal. We're not really the YouTube.
Right.
Yeah. We'll let you guys be y'all do a good job.
Yeah, y'all kill it there.
Yeah. We couldn't top you guys. So.
Hey, wait, I have a quick question before we move on or shut it down or whatever. Where can you purchase this at?
I was going to say, what's your distribution? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for bringing that up. So we sent
a better host than I am.
We sent a good portion.
Chris just back there drinking whiskey.
Yeah, he's having a good old
hanging
time.
Hanging out. No, I'm kidding.
Let somebody else take care of the hard questions. So we sent a bunch of it to Sealbox. So you can so you can get it delivered to, I think, like, I don't know, 18, 20 something states, something like that through Sealbox. We also have traditional distribution set up in Georgia, Tennessee, Texas, and Kentucky. So it is currently on store shelves in those four states. And we'll be looking to potentially actually open up Michigan. We had a conversation about 2 weeks ago with potentially doing that, potentially opening up to Ohio. But I don't know if that'll happen this year. It might be a 2022 thing. It's even blessed, I guess, is the best way to put it. We got an email from our distributor in Kentucky yesterday. He goes like, we sold out of all the cases like within 2 days. Like, can we put another order next week? Like,
yeah, we'll sell you all the whiskey we don't have. And that's, you know, and I used to, you know, you go around and beg people to sell you whiskey and you're like, what do you mean? Why can't they just give us a few barrels? And now you get it. You know, it's like the demand.
I don't have any.
Yeah. It's not just us. It's just bourbon in general. So whiskey in general.
I remember trying to talk New Riff into coming to Texas and they were like, you don't understand. like they're blowing up so fast. They were having trouble keeping up with demand. And even at 4 years old, they're still, you know, relatively small. It's so crazy. I'm so excited for you guys because you're doing everything you can. The bandwidth that you guys are able to manage, the number of episodes you do, even if you have the guy from Dallas on, whatever his freaking name was, the bandwidth is impressive, and I've said it already a couple times. You guys are inspirational. Everyone that I invited on today, I admire you guys deeply, and I really, really am thankful that you guys are friends. So thanks so much for doing this.
Right back at you.
Thanks for having us. Thank you for having us.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm excited to hang out again soon. So. Fuck Dallas, and I'll see you guys later.
Love it.
Cheers.
Cheers. Thank you, sir.
Balcony's first ever year-round bourbon was an inspiration. It all had to work together. A blend of carefully selected ingredients, Texas-sized pot stills, and creative people determined to find the absolute best way to usher a new whiskey along. When you discover how it pairs with a meaningful moment, suddenly the feeling of drinking great whiskey becomes a whole lot more.